and welcome to the Commode Code, your comprehensive guide to restroom etiquette in the 21st century. I'm your host, Justin York, and I'm joined by my co-host, Peter.
Hey, everybody.
So this week, we're going to lead off with some current-ish events. This comes from a piece from Jesse Young, writing for CNN. The link is in the show notes at commode.show/2 if you want to follow along. Dateline, August 14, 2018. Eco-friendly open-air urinals cause uproar in Paris. We go to press. An attempt by officials in Paris to tackle public urination by installing open-air urinals or uretoires, sorry, my French is bad.
That was good.
Has outraged some residents of the French capital. The new urinals, housed in flower boxes, aren't subtle. They're fully exposed on street corners, are painted bright red, and have nearby signs advertising their presence. So, first, let's talk about what these things look like.
Yeah. So I understand that the residents might be a little frustrated with the bright red top half of this uretoire thing. But it's important when somebody's inebriated, especially, to make it remarkably obvious where this is located.
Right. And I think that's one of the big problems that they're trying to solve. Reading more of the article, they are going into both touristy areas and just areas where the city government has noted problems with this.
Yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, I know this is a big problem in England as well. I'm happy to see France taking on the subject as well.
Yeah. So I'm going to move on a little bit here. Officials say the urinals are eco-friendly. They will harness nutrients and waste to produce compost for parks and gardens. According to the statement, 1 year of a person's urine holds enough nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium to fertilize 400 square meters of wheat.
Wow, that'd make some really great bread right there.
Yeah, so someone's going to make some artisanal fancy bread where they're going to advertise that 100% human fertilized.
I certainly hope they come out with a whiz cake.
A whiz cake. Yeah. I wonder what color do you go for? Do you go for the pink or the blue?
On the whiz cake, I think you go with the traditional Twinkie yellow.
Oh, the Twinkie yellow. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. It's in that book of colors, Twinkie yellow.
Yeah. So my favorite part of this article comes up here, which I think is either, I don't know, losing or maybe gaining something in the translation from French. Quote, I think installing a urinal in the streets of Paris for those who don't respect their surroundings is a good idea. But in my opinion, this model is not attractive at all. And where it's been set up is not appropriate at all, one man told reporters.
I would have loved for them to ask the gentleman what they would like this urinal to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no real winning situation here. You can't have it camouflaged. You know, nobody's going to find it. They're just going to whiz on the street instead. So.
No. So I think that's something where, you know, there are public restrooms in European cities. A lot of time those are coin operated.
Absolutely.
But there's a cleaning protocol that happens after you use it to kind of make your coinage worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting continuation on that article. Public urinals, or pissoirs, as they're known in French, have a long history in Paris, dating back to the late 1800s, when they were installed for men traveling to and from work. It wasn't until women started entering the workforce in greater numbers decades later that the need for enclosed cubicles with seats, toilet paper, and hand basins emerged, explained Raymond Martin, managing director of the British Toilet Association. So I think the most interesting thing to me here is that we had a situation, or they had a situation in Paris, where way back in the 1800s, they recognized a need, they filled it, then they realized that they were basically being problematic because more and more women were in the workforce and they were providing this pissoirs that, by the way, they look phenomenal. I don't know if you saw those.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was very cool. The historical footage.
Yeah. There's this photo and it's sort of a circular trough around a central station with a streetlight.
Yeah, it almost looked a bit like a torture device when I first saw it. And then I saw, I guess, how it worked. Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a problem that they still have with these new street-side urinals, is that they're extremely specific for male genitalia.
That is correct. I would not expect the woman to be able to really hit the target on these new units.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen devices for, you know, women.
Mm-hmm.
For when you're going out camping or otherwise want to stand. And I know they're useful for, you know, trans men.
Sure.
I don't think you're going to expect every, you know, female identifying person to be carrying this device and able to use.
That's a lot to ask right there. Yeah.
So I think there is a problem there with these. And I also just wonder, you know, how much people are really going to be willing to use them.
Yeah, I could see a lot of the drunk males in the late evenings using them. And that does solve one problem. It does not so much solve the problem when you have the tourists walking around. You've got a small family, needs to find a restroom. I'm not going to ask my kid to use this device out in public in daylight.
Yeah. Now, one thing I saw while researching this article further, and I forgot to bring the link, so I can't show you right now, but the company that made these has many models advertised on their website, including one that they called like their XL model.
Ooh.
And they show two men standing next to each other at it.
Fantastic.
Both in sport coats or suit jackets.
Sure, it's for the everyday gentleman.
Yes. And one of them is taking a selfie. He's holding a cell phone in his left hand in front of him. And it's pointed. I mean, I assume he's taking a selfie. This is what it looks like.
I hope he's got a good angle on that shot right there.
Yeah. To me, this is the most buck wild thing about the whole thing, except for maybe the street sign that calls it out. Mm-hmm. So we didn't really talk about that.
Not yet. But before we get to the street sign, could I rewind to one of the quotes you just said?
Yeah.
You said he was the managing director of the British Toilet Association.
Yes.
So there is somebody out there, and there's an organization out there that is called the British Toilet Association.
There is. We should probably dig into that more.
There
in the
is a lot of gold in that subject, I think. Okay. Just wanted to double check.
And I'm sure they have a long history of very good work in the toilet department.
Absolutely.
That we would definitely need to dig into. Because, another detail left out of the quotes is that the British had these public urinals also around the same time, late 1800s.
Gotcha.
And there it would cost you a penny to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's still a British slang term that I wasn't aware of.
Hmm.
Apparently it's spend a penny is a phrase to mean taking a whiz in British English.
There you go.
I was not aware of this. But it comes from the British version of these French pissoirs.
Fantastic.
Costing a penny.
I think we just found a way to put this podcast in the educational genre.
Oh, I think it already is.
Okay, great.
All right. All right. So let's talk about the sign that they've put up right on top of or next to. They show one. There's one, the one by Notre Dame overlooks the River Seine, right? Mm-hmm. And you can actually see a tourist boat going by, and everyone on that boat can clearly see the top of this urinal as well as the sign that's pointing to it.
Or any patrons of that urinal.
Yes. Although I gotta say, I think the patrons of this urinal have a great view.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But yes. So this sign, I don't know. Do you want to describe it to us?
Yeah, sure. So the signage is, you've got the word of the you're a tutoir, but the gentleman standing at the device is in an extremely awkward position. I mean, we are talking full arch of the back with an upward trajectory that is almost defying gravity.
Yeah, and his groin is the closest part of him to the device.
Correct. Yeah, it's very strange that they went with that position on the urinal. I mean, that would right there be a foul in my urinal etiquette right there. Also, the iconography of the gentleman, he has the most amazing hairdo. It's hard to tell if it's kind of like a Morrissey thing with like the front lift and the sideburns, or if it's more mohawk with sideburns, but it's pretty progressive. I like it.
Yeah, it's a great haircut. You guys should definitely check out this picture in the show notes, or if you're using a podcast player that supports chapter show art, you'll see it in your podcast player right now.
Fantastic. Also, though, I worry that the sign in the position of the gentleman in the sign is really almost asking people to try to shoot from a distance or go for arc rather than like efficiency and cleanliness. I believe you said on the top of the device is some sort of a small gardeny potted plant type thing.
Yeah, it's a flower box on top. And I think there's a double idea here. One is to make it at least somewhat decorative.
Sure.
So that's not just completely ugly. And the other is to emit a pleasing aroma from the flowers to you know, both for the patrons and just mm-hmm. for the surroundings. Now, of course, as you urinate into these, it's collected into sort of straw and other compost stuff. So it's going to take a while before it gets really smelly.
Sure.
They've definitely thought that part through. But
yeah,
wouldn't you, I don't think you'd want to be leaning so far back and so far away as this.
I just worry that it's going to encourage people to shoot for that flower box rather than go for the target.
Ah, yes. That could be a problem.
Could be a challenge or a challenge.
But yeah, it does look like, you know, trying to guess on the scale of these things, that his feet are probably 2 feet back.
Yeah.
While his groin is probably still a foot back.
Yeah.
And this all seems very much not the right way to use this device.
That all said, it's clear that this gentleman in the signage is urinating. So I think they've established the purpose of the device.
Right.
I just question some of the choices in the artistics.
Yeah. I mean, and it does definitely make it more universal. I think
sure.
you don't need to speak French or even be
sure.
able to intuit that word. Once you see the sign,
yeah.
it's pretty clear what the
That's
device
true.
Is for. So
yeah, they might've done the kind of the cool hair and the advanced posturing for some of the Scandinavian crowd that comes down to France on occasion.
Oh, you think that's
that is
specifically why?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You have anything else to say on this one?
No, I think we're good. I think overall, I'd like to just say it's a positive step to reduce public urination in non-proper places.
Yeah, I just think the thing is, if you have these and you don't have like free stalls
right.
available
yeah.
nearby, then you have sort of this gender imbalance situation.
Correct. Yeah, really. I mean, yeah, I think unless they're clearly assuming that the problem lies with the male population late at night, and that everybody else is served as needed.
I mean, and I guess that's probably likely.
Yeah.
You know, with the people that I know,
mm-hmm.
The males are definitely more likely to soil a street.
Absolutely. But. Yeah. Sometimes just for fun.
All right. So we're going to move on to our first proper etiquette topic this week, and that's going to be loogies.
Oh, yeah.
In the men's room, I frequently encountered this at the urinal where a person using it will clear their throat, wind up and hock straight into that urinal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the entry point for this is. Do you have a good spot for us to start?
I would just say that throughout my years, especially in the workplace, it seems clear that there are individuals that this is 100% part of their pre-urinal routine.
Right.
Like they walk up, they establish foot position. The first thing they do is drop a spit or a loogie into the bowl to kind of make sure they're at the right head position. Then they start urinating. I never really understood it, but it seems to just be, you know, super ingrained into their whole ritual.
That's interesting. I never thought of it as sort of an aim check.
Yeah, that's my only assumption is like, why are we doing this? Just to make sure we're in proper position.
That's interesting. Yeah. So if you do have like a whole phlegm situation.
Sure.
So what I wonder is, is this better or worse than using the sink for this?
I'm going to say it's better.
Okay.
On the off chance that you leave behind some spit residue, I would rather it be behind in the urinal than at the sink. Hopefully the number of flushes at the urinal will help clear it out more quickly than something sitting on the edge of the sink that's not getting touched until the staff gets in there.
Okay. I brought an article for this also. Which is kind of funny. I was surprised to encounter this in Men's Health magazine. It was entitled How to Clear Phlegm from Your Throat. So the first expert is, so here's the big question. Do you spit or swallow your phlegm?
The eternal question.
Yes. Even though it might taste nasty, quote, there's nothing wrong with swallowing it, unquote, Dr. Kammer says. In fact, that's probably what your body expects you to do, which is why phlegm naturally drains down into the back of your throat. So with this in mind, like, is it still the right thing to do to use the sink or the urinal? Or should you really just get over yourself and swallow your loogie?
Sure. I mean, as a chronic allergy sufferer, I can really commiserate with some of these people. Especially this time of the year, I get a lot of nasal congestion that can turn into a post-nasal drip situation, you know, that does end up as phlegm in the throat. I try not to make too many aggressively loud hockering noises, though,
mm-hmm.
especially in the workplace. It's just a little uncomfortable for everybody to hear. Some people are more sensitive to that. But there will be a time that there's almost an emergency phlegm situation where it's, you've got that tickle in the throat and you just kind of have to do an aggressive clear and fire it right into the urinal.
All right. So if you are going to do that, if you are going to hock, the article does give some advice on that, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
It says to form a U shape with your tongue while forcing air and saliva forward using the muscles at the back of your throat.
That is interesting.
And then when you have the phlegm in your mouth, they advise to hock it into your bathroom sink.
Yeah.
Now, I assume they're talking of a home bathroom here.
Sure.
In a shared situation, I think it could be any fixture.
Yeah.
What do you think about the bowl? What do you think about doing this in the stall?
Yeah. I mean, it depends. Obviously, if you're in a standing position in the stall and you're trying to hock a lug, I mean, there's some space between you and that bowl. And that leaves a lot of room for error. You could deviate and shoot that right on the seat. Worst case, to the floor. I mean, that's pretty bad form. So I often don't recommend shooting for the bowl in a standing position. Now, in a seated position, it's also risky.
Yeah.
Because here's the case where you try to shoot one down and you hit yourself right in the junk. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, now you're like just in a bad situation. It's, you know, a lot of cleanup required. Nobody's happy.
No. All right. So that covers loogies. I think our summary is swallow if you can stomach it. Try not to make it part of your normal routine.
Correct.
Urinal is probably the best fixture.
Yes.
If you are going to use a restroom fixture.
Sure.
And then your sink's probably your backup.
Yeah. And for all those out there that might be at the sink and have a situation where they need to spit in the sink, do what you got to do. But please be responsible for your cleanup.
Yes.
You know, like I personally, if I've done that, or if like I brush my teeth in the work sink for whatever reason, you're going to want to go ahead and get some extra water on that. Try to make sure everything rinsed down.
Right.
Nobody else wants to see your business.
No. That kind of is the main reason that we have a lot of what we have around restrooms.
Agreed.
Yeah. No one wants to see your business.
Agreed.
So next we're going to move into our main topic, which is something that Peter put into our show notes as the pre-dump checklist. So give us the walkthrough of this procedure.
Sure. Peter. This is important. I mean, a lot of us think about this all the time. Others maybe are a little more carefree with their day-to-day, and you can get yourself in a pretty bad situation, especially at the workplace. So the pre-dump checklist starts the moment you enter that restroom. You open the door, you want to check, like, are the lights working? Do we have a timer situation on the lights that the timers or the motion sensors not working correctly? There's nothing more creepy than taking a dump in the dark at work. It's happened. Okay. It's happened.
Yeah.
And it's not comfortable. So you walk in that restroom, you're making a stall selection based on some high order algorithms of, you know, stall and urinal selection that we'll go into at a different time. Once you've selected that stall, the first thing you're doing, once you enter that stall, is you're starting with a visual checklist.
Okay.
Much like a pilot, this is where you're visually inspecting some of the important areas of the stall. First, I like to make sure there's ample toilet paper. Oftentimes there's a single roll, but if there's a setup with backup rolls, you want to make sure you have what you need. Think worst case scenario. Think that you're in there. It's not been a good day. Lots of wiping going on. Make sure you got enough.
Okay.
Nothing worse at the workplace than running out of TP.
You don't want to be the guy asking for help.
Yeah. There's only a couple other situations at work that could be much worse, but this is one of them. So you've made that toilet paper check. Next, I want you to look at that toilet apparatus itself. I want to see that that toilet is securely bolted to the floor, to the wall. I don't want to see it like looking like it's half falling off the wall from some previous craziness going on in there. I want to check that seat. I want to make sure the seat is secure, securely fastened. I don't want to see any cracks or damage on that seat that could end up with a stall injury. Again, not good in the workplace, trying to explain how you need stitches in your buttock. Finally, I want you to check that floor. I want to make sure there's no puddles there. I don't want you dipping down with your pants and soaking up a bunch of puddle. That would be disgusting. And then you have to go back to the desk with that. Nobody wants that. Also, when you're inspecting that seat, you're looking at a sanitary feature as well, and that kind of informs whether or not you need to go with the paper ass gasket or you should just go with a quick wipe. Either way, I want to see some sanitary treatment.
All right. Do you want to get into the criteria for using the seat cover?
You know, it really depends on your level of comfort with germs. My personal routine is to visually inspect. I don't see any visual indication of liquids or marks of any kind. Mm-hmm. I still go with a small paper wipe, and I probably skip the gasket. Now, other people might automatically go gasket. They're not going to take a chance. They don't want to get any sort of stuff on them.
Right.
But if you see anything on that seat, you might want to go with a paper wipe followed by a gasket.
Okay.
Moving on from the visual inspection on the pre-dump checklist, then we get into the mechanical steps. This is where we're going to like make sure things are functional in that stall before we begin dumping. Let me emphasize before we begin right. dumping. We're not checking things after we've started, because this is where you get yourself into trouble. All right. So you've done the seat wipe. You might as well go ahead and do a pre-flush. So if you use some paper, drop it in the bowl, give it a pre-flush.
Okay. Now, yeah. do you do this, if this is a known toilet,
mm-hmm.
will you do this every time?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And here's why. Because, you know, it could be your go-to spot. It's your favorite toilet of the building. However, somebody before you wrecked it.
Right.
And looking at it, hey, everything looks great. I'm just going to dump away. But no, it's clogged. And you can't tell sometimes just from the visual inspection. So I go with that seat wipe, drop something in the bowl, give it that pre-flush.
Okay.
Make sure we got a good solid flush. Nothing's backing up. You know, everything's good to go there. After that, the quality of the flush has been determined. That, you know, will rule out any blockages. I want you to look at that door and that locking mechanism. Make sure that the door is properly seated, that you can lock the door securely. Nobody's going to be breaking in while you're in there. And you're not getting extra eye contact with anybody who's coming and knocking.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want to carefully evaluate your crack situation,
mm-hmm.
By which I mean the door crack.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your own crack. I assume you have that under control.
Probably.
Yeah. Hopefully. So once you've passed the visual and the mechanical inspection, you're pretty much go for dump at this point. It's just making sure that there's nothing else that's going to like fall apart midway through. Sounds like you're good. Then you can go ahead and start.
All right. Now, do you do, with the visual inspection, do you do a full vertical scan?
Uh-huh.
What I'm yes. thinking about
no,
here.
Yes, absolutely.
You go got to make sure there's no sort of spider situation.
100%.
Above you, right?
And this primarily comes into play when we're camping. We're in like a truck stop kind of situation where the, you know, the sanitary standards aren't quite what you're used to at the workplace. Yeah. Having a look for the insect situation is great. Make sure there's, you know, no peepholes or something creepy going on up above you.
Right. Yeah. You don't want that recurring nightmare of the brown recluse dropping onto you while you're doing your business.
No, that's really not good.
Yeah. That could become reality. And then you die on the can in like the least dignified way possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I believe there was a character on The Sopranos who went that way.
The brown recluse.
No, just on the can though. Oh, okay. On the can. Yeah. You don't want to go that way.
I mean, that's a matter of folklore, right? You've got Elvis.
true.
Famously.
I think there could be a whole historical podcast about historical can deaths.
It's an interesting question. Put it on the list.
We'll do.
We'll see. There might be an episode there in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of in the parlance of computer speak, what's a fatal error here versus a warning? Are there things where it's noteworthy
mm-hmm.
if it fails the inspection,
sure.
but you can still proceed.
Yeah, yeah. The first one that comes to mind is on the mechanical test of the flush mechanism. Sometimes you'll go for flush and you'll get kind of a half flush.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, whoa, you know, what just happened there? You know, are we in a block situation, or maybe the flush didn't quite hold long enough so you didn't get a full flush? That's my first level of like error warning.
Okay.
But what I'll do is a secondary flush, a full test.
Keep checking.
Now, if it's an automatic flush unit, usually there's an override button that you
right.
can hold. Like I've seen a situation at work where the automatic flush isn't really a full flush. It kind of does this very sad amount of flush. It leaves behind all sorts of debris. So I always go with the override of holding the button and to get a full flush.
Right. Well, I think a lot of the automatics these days use a heuristic of how long the scanner's been dropped or been blocked. And then they will either do a low flow flush assuming a number one or a high flow flush assuming a number two. So you have to kind of either fake it out
uh-huh.
by holding your hand in front of it for a minute, which no one's going to do.
Right.
Or use that override button.
So if you're a tremendously quick pooper, you might get a low flush on that heuristic.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you're really, you know,
A one and done. Bloop, gone.
If you're in and out, if it's a quick, clean day.
I admire the hell out of these people, by the way.
Well, you know, it's a dietary thing more than anything else, right?
Yeah.
So is there anything else that can be a warning situation? You know, you double check the flush.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever kind of, I don't know, you get like a warning when you see that there's no ass gaskets available.
Right, sure.
But then you can override if your visual inspection says, I don't necessarily need a seat cover on this go-round, right?
Or you can go full farmer style and fashion an ass gasket out of paper, you know, toilet paper.
Yeah.
But you really, let me emphasize this. I have seen this happen to some of the best people in the industry. If you've made an ass gasket out of toilet paper, ensure that none of that toilet paper is still stuck to you when you have dressed and you're leaving a paper tail. I have seen it happen. It's amazing.
Yeah. I think you also want to ensure that you properly dispose of that.
Absolutely.
Gasket. I've seen this a lot where you'll come into a stall and someone will have left. And not the normal seat cover, but one that they have constructed themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's just not a great thing to leave behind this.
However, it would be quite amazing if they had made like an origami version where they have folded it and like made it something that contours the seat exactly.
Right.
I go with a three slice. I go square on the round hole.
See, I've seen like a lot of times there's like the 20 slice version, like where they've just keep gone until like they've, you know. It's like, I'm going to do this one here, until they've satisfied themselves that they've made this like ersatz ass gasket. But it's really not the way that you want to be seen. If someone sees you coming out of there,
right,
they know you're the person
who
spent 3 minutes constructing the elaborate situation.
Yep.
I think that might have some social consequences.
It could. It could work in your favor, though, if you're like you're in the UX or design industry. And like like somebody's like, wow, look at the dedication and the commitment they put into that gasket right there.
That's true. You're being detail oriented.
Absolutely.
I also wanted to say, is there anything else outside the stall? Do you do a paper towel check or a dryer check?
The super intense individual would probably do this on the way in, like making sure that there's either paper towels or a functional dryer. I'm pretty flexible at this. I'm going to wash my hands no matter what. If I don't have a paper towel to use, you know, I'm going to shake them off as best I can and probably just wipe them on the pants or something like that. But
okay. And I guess the last thing I wanted to go back to the door gap and the lock mail function. Now, do you have any mitigations for these types of situations that you recommend?
Sure. I mean, I'd like to preface all of this by saying there's times when it's basically an emergency situation and you're going to have to find a stall stat. You can't be picky. You can't be choosy. You might go in there and you might notice that like, wow, this latch really doesn't line up and I can't really lock this door correctly. So there's situations where you have to keep a hand up just as an emergency catch in case somebody comes a knocking. I've done that before. It's not dignified, but you know, you got to do what you got to do. The worst thing you can possibly have happen is, I won't say it's me. Let's call this guy Jim. Was in the stall. Everything was locked up, good to go, doing the business. Mm-hmm. Here's the janitorial crew come into the restroom at the same time. Here's them going a couple stalls over, works their way towards my stall, gets to my stall, or I mean Jim's, and just busts the door right open. Full eye contact. Oh, sorry, sir. Apparently the locking mechanism was not up to par. I failed on the checklist. I didn't actually make sure that it was secure. And now I had this awkward eye contact with this gentleman, or Jim did. so like there are things you got to take your time, do the checklist right. See if you can get away, you know, make sure everything's working before anything starts. The same with the toilet paper. You've looked, now you've seen how much toilet paper is left. You got to weigh that against the emergency options here. It's like, okay, there's not a lot of TP left, but this is an emergency situation. So at that point, you need to just go ahead and just work with what you have. I don't care if you have to go MacGyver on it and like start shredding up the toilet paper tube as a backup wipe utility, but there's got to be something you can do there.
There's got to be something. I actually wanted to go back to the door situation and an anecdote I had, which was I was in a Starbucks location.
Sure.
And they have individual restrooms, you know, one person ones. This one did not have the occupied indicator on the outside.
Right.
And this will be important in that I went, one of the restrooms was closed for repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pushed open the door to the other one, and there was a woman there, luckily not in the middle of her situation. She was actually constructing one of these AirSense ass gaskets.
Very nice.
Yeah, she looked about 12 pieces of TP into her operation. And she, you know, freaked out.
Right.
I understand why. And she's like, I locked the door. And I'm like, well, you locked the door, but you didn't close the door.
Oh,
is actually
yeah.
what happened in that situation.
So, yeah, I mean, part of that checklist should be not only checking, you know, that the lock spins left to right, but that it is, you know, actually yeah. latched and
it
not pushable.
Secures.
Yeah. yeah. There's so many places you can make a mistake on this.
Yeah. It can get really nasty.
There. Yeah. And especially in the workplace, where if it's like, if I walk in on somebody I have to work with day to day and I've made eye contact with something I right. shouldn't have, it's now even more awkward.
Yeah. You don't want that. All right. So does that cover the whole pre-dump checklist?
I feel it does.
Okay.
You know, everybody out there's got a different tolerance for this stuff, but it's just important to think ahead a little bit, especially in the workplace.
All right. So that's the first part of our series on taking a dump.
Absolutely.
At work. We will continue that probably next episode. For now, we're going to move on to our deuces and don'ts segment, where we adjudicate your restroom encounters and answer your burning questions. We have two questions this week. They both come from listener Eric. So thanks, listener Eric. The first question was, what's your take on religious observances in the restroom, particularly feet washing?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to start off with this, which is basically that my take in general is that washing and cleanliness specific activities are okay, but you know, you probably don't want to be putting down a prayer mat and praying on a restroom floor if you can at all avoid it.
Absolutely not.
Right. You know, if you're talking about washing your feet, feet aren't necessarily dirtier than hands
sure.
in any way. But if you're going to wash them, you need to absolutely minimize the splash factor
yep.
and rinse the sink. Just like, you know, the loogie situation earlier, if you've done anything to that sink that's
mm-hmm.
a little bit, you know, out of the normal societal norm,
sure.
you need to make sure to clean up after yourself.
Yeah. I mean, leave everything in the restroom in the state you would want to see it when you enter.
Right. You know, if you can use a restroom with more privacy, like if there's a accessible
mm-hmm.
Restroom that has a sink that's more suited. You know, a lot of times an accessible stall will have a lower
sure.
sink, and
yep.
that can make feet washing a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get in and out pretty quickly, you're not blocking it for anyone who needs the other accessibility features,
right.
then, you know, that could help out with minimizing your awkward social contact and making this awkward in
Absolutely.
Any way. And I think, you know, you need to explain why you're washing your feet and how careful you are to be respectful of this space if someone comes in, right? I think the worst thing you can do if you're someone who is washing your feet because, you know, you're going to pray
mm-hmm.
is if someone sees you doing it to just look at each other awkwardly. I
right.
think you have mm-hmm. a genuine opportunity for cultural discourse here.
You sure do.
Yeah. And you probably shouldn't pass that up. Right.
No, that'd be good. I mean, but at the same time, it'd be kind of entertaining for the individual who doesn't understand it's part of a religious preparation. If you were just sitting there at the sink, scrubbing your feet, break, you know, small chat about, you know, last night's ball game, some
right.
soccer match. Hey, how'd the Sounders do last night?
Yeah.
Hey, great game, blah, blah, blah. I'm scrubbing my feet.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely do that. But I think if they're looking at you all askance, then.
Yeah, if you catch a sideways glance, might be a great opportunity to explain what's going on.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to add in the foot washing or other preparation?
No, I mean, I would just emphasize, you know, being careful. The
yeah.
last thing you want is a workplace injury, especially in the restroom. So if you've got one foot up on the sink, the other one's on the floor, something happens, you turn, slip, knee goes out, bad
yeah,
times in the restroom. Nobody wants to be carted off from an ambulance, you know, from the restroom. So really be careful in there and please leave your sink as clean as it was when you got in there.
Yep. All right. The other thing Eric asks is much less fraught. It's just about teeth brushing.
Sure.
I think it's fine in most contexts. What about you?
Yeah. Especially at the workplace, you know, you might find yourself after a meal that was a little something, a little extra garlic. You
yeah.
might want to go in there and just brush up, have a fresh mouth for the rest of the day. You have to have some face time with your manager. You don't want to be blasting them with some onions. You know, it's a great, you know, it seems to make a lot of sense to go in there and have a brush. Again, please clean the sink up as
yep.
you would want to find it.
Yeah, this was actually something that I saw while on a business trip in Korea.
Mm.
They are in several offices where I used their restroom. They'd actually have a mug where people kept their toothbrushes at the office.
Like employee toothbrushes.
Employee toothbrushes.
Oh, interesting.
Now, personally, I probably wouldn't want to use this. I don't know if this is a cultural difference.
Sure.
It's also, I probably just don't buy distinctive enough toothbrushes that I'd actually be able to retrieve my own.
So those toothbrushes, they were commingling in one mug?
Yes.
So they could cross bristle at some point?
Potentially cross bristle.
That gets a little questionable.
It is, but you're also going to be putting like a detergent.
Yeah, that is true. I just get a little, not freaked out, but a little bit like, I don't know if I want my bristles, or like, what if like this guy grabs my brush because it kind of looked like his and he's got some sketchy oral hygiene.
Yeah, that's why I'd probably, if I was going to do this, bring your own brush in a travel case.
Yeah, I like that. Travel case, keep at your desk kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I will say where I work currently, they provide disposable toothbrushes in the restroom.
Like the single-use one?
Single-use. And I feel, I've only used it like maybe 3 times in 2 years because I feel horrible the amount of waste you're generating.
Right.
Because I don't keep that thing. I just kind of use it once and chuck it. And that's, to me, not ideal. But it's only like in emergency situations.
Yeah. Now, are you talking about the ones that are the short, stubby ones that have the pre-portioned paste in the middle?
Yeah, these are more like full-size toothbrushes, cellophane wrapped, that have some sort of pre-pasted bristles on them. Yeah. Again, I usually think of it as a failure when I've used one. But
yeah, I can see that. I've seen a couple different variations.
Sure.
On this theme, I've always said to myself, like, oh, that's a really nice thing that I will probably never, ever use.
Mm-hmm. Other than the workplace situation where you've got some bad breath going on, you want to freshen up. I mean, you have to be careful when you're brushing your teeth. I mean, it just could look a little awkward. Like if it's first in the morning at work, it's like clearly you've forgotten your morning routine at home. So if you're in there every morning brushing your teeth, I start to question, like, why doesn't this person brush their teeth at home before they come to work?
Right. But there's also the situation where if you work in a workplace where either food is provided in the morning or there's like a cafe with really good breakfast sandwiches just in the building.
Sure. Right?
It might be part of your morning routine.
That could be. That could be.
I'm going to eat at the office and then brush my teeth afterwards. After.
Yeah, that could happen, I suppose.
But yeah, it's it can be an interesting situation where if you're seen doing that very frequently. It's
right. Like, and then you start to question it.
Yeah. Why skip your home routine and just do that here? I mean, maybe that's the, you know, there's the old rhyme about pooping on company time because, you know, I get a penny, boss gets a dime. That's why I poop on company time. Could be the same thing. That's why I brush on company time because, you know, I get those 2 minutes. My boss is paid for that.
I think I've just figured out the name to my next album.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
That, I mean, not to divert the conversation, but that also begs the question about flossing.
Yeah.
Flossing at the workplace, especially, do you find it acceptable, especially with these portable little flossers, not the full slice of, you know, floss, but the little handheld deals?
Right. The one that's a toothpick on one end and a little tiny flosser on the other. Yeah.
Can you do that at your desk or do you need to head to a restroom or some more private space to use one of those?
Personally, I'd probably head to the restroom or, you know, if there's like a phone room type situation.
AKA the fart closet.
Yes, a fart closet. Yeah. If there's a small room at the office where you can get a small modicum of privacy, I would probably do it there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's going to look a little awkward when you're in there, especially if you're not sure exactly what part of the mouth you're going for.
Sure.
Because sometimes you get, you know, I'm going to clean between these two teeth. And then, oh, no, wait, it was actually also one tooth forward. And you're just in there like 3 times in and out. You don't want to be that person who's picking at their teeth.
Yeah, that's my thought as well. I mean, sometimes you have some jerky or something and it's like, oh my gosh, I got to get this thing out immediately. I'm in pain. And I'll grab one of those flossers and maybe wherever I am, just quickly get in there. But I try to go for as much privacy as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're agreed on that.
I think so.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this week's episode of the Commode Code. Show notes for this week are at commode.show/2. The show is on Twitter and Facebook as Commode Code. You can find me on Twitter at BangFalse, BangFalse. Peter is on Twitter at TheMadCrapper. Our music is by AudioNautics.com. Please help us out by reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or giving us a star in Overcast. If any of your friends might like this sort of thing, please recommend the show to them. We'll be back again next fortnight.
See ya.
Yeah, this is a hugely fiber-related situation.
Could be.
And dietary balance, but...
that's dead. That's nothing.